It's no secret that the United Nations peacekeeping mission in Syria has failed so far. The UN is closing down its observer mission in Damascus this weekend. They're packing up and leaving. One UN official expressed the frustration over the bloodshed that's left an estimated 20,000 people dead since it started about 17 months ago. He said, "Both sides have chosen war." And the regime of President Bashar al-Assad continues to pound the opposition with airstrikes and shelling. Bartle Bull is a former editor at Prospect magazine and a founder of Northern Gulf Partners, an Iraq-focused investment firm. He joins us on the line to talk about what the future holds for Syria. Bartle, welcome.
Thanks very much, Sasha. Nice to be speaking to you.
Bartle, would you first give us your sense of the significance of the end of the UN peacekeeping mission in Syria and whether it even had a chance to make any difference there?
Yeah, I don't think it's really big news, Sasha. I don't think it had any chance at all. Russia and China have their vetoes at the UN, and and they're very strong backers of the Assad regime, and there's really nothing that would have happened without their approval. So the UN's presence in the country wasn't very meaningful.
So then how do you think the Assad regime will react to the UN pulling out? You know, will it take it as a sign that outside opposition to what he's doing doesn't matter, or even as a license to step up his offensive against the rebels?
I don't think it means a thing to the regime. They're focused on much more real things than the presence of a UN mission that wasn't going to do anything anyway. What will be on their mind is the strength of the opposition and in their country and the strength of external support for the opposition in real terms. You know, the fighting on the ground every day is what matters to these guys.
It sounds like you think that for the Assad regime, this peacekeeping mission was just a gnat, just sort of a pest, and now finally that pest is gone.
Yeah, or, you know, perhaps that. Perhaps, in fact, it's something that, you know, they, in a sense, they welcomed. I mean, if the more the West pays attention to the UN on this issue, the better it is for the regime, because the UN will, with Russia and China, never do anything. The worst thing that can happen in terms of international diplomacy for the regime is for the UN to be as irrelevant as, say, it was in Libya, where it was NATO that acted. You know, had we continued to give the UN a veto over our ability to act there, Gaddafi would still be around.
So you think the Assad regime likes the UN to appear impotent in a way?
Or perhaps not to be impotent, but to exercise its sort of veto over U.S. And NATO and Western action.
Mm.
If the U.S. can't act because the U.N. is vetoing our action, that'll be very good for the regime.
That's interesting. So how strong do you consider the Assad regime, considering that there have been some high-level defections recently?
That's a really, really great question, Sasha. They are very weak in numerous important ways. They control a fraction of the country's territory. Recently defected prime minister said 30%. I'd hazard it's substantially less than that from my last visit there. They have ceased to be a government or even a regime, but certainly has ceased to be a government in the sense that they don't govern. They don't run the nation's, you know, schools and courts or anything else. They control the big cities and a dozen or a couple of dozen of the smaller cities and larger towns. In that sense, they're very weak. You know, demographically, so to speak, they're weak. They probably suffer an 80-20 disadvantage in terms of the basic demography of the country. They're very, very strong. And you know, these defections you mentioned continue.
Mm-hmm.
Major sign of weakness. They're very strong, however, in another sense. It's a big, organized, functioning army. You know, it's not like Saddam's, it just fell apart immediately. And they have a blank check from Iran and a blank check from Russia, and so they're very, very well armed.
So military
and as a fighting force, they continue and will to be very strong.
So military might and financial backing. What about street support? Is there much of it, if at all, for Assad?
That is a very, very much of a factor against the regime. The basic numbers in Syria are as follows. The regime has most of its support from the community that Assad himself comes from, the Alawites, religious cousins, so to speak, of the Shias of Iran and the Shias of Hezbollah in Lebanon, who support them. Other minorities, the country's 10% Christian community, for example, have, as Saddam did with the Christians in Iraq, to make up the numbers, have traditionally been allies of Assad's minority regime. If you add it all up, and of course these are generalizations, lots of Christians are with the revolution, lots of Alawites are with the revolution. The country's 80% Sunni, and there are a handful of others, you know, Kurds and Druze, for example. Numbers are probably something like 80-20 revolution Assad.
In terms of
the street is really against him. I think that's indisputable.
So as you just said in that sort of demographic breakdown, there's a Sunni majority in Syria. The Assads are part of the minority Alawites. So, and that's why this fight has been called sometimes a civil war. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has accused the regime of pitting Syria's minorities against each other. Do you think that's what Assad wants, to end up on top of a country of militias, with his being the most powerful one?
It's a great question, Sasha. I mean, you know, what does he want at this stage? There's absolutely no way he can get back to anything like power over the country. The numbers simply, now that the country's finally erupted after 42 years of Assad and his father, finally erupted, also because of the way that he is conducting this war, largely through indiscriminate attacks on his own cities, on the population centers. You know, it's the opposite of smart counterinsurgency that the U.S. got good at halfway through the Iraq War. You know, this isn't the conduct of a guy who appears to expect to, you know, rule over his country once more. What is it that he wants? I mean, there's a very good chance that he sort of ultimately retreats to the Alawite heartland, which is the along the Mediterranean coast, very mountainous, the mountains of the province of Latakia. I expect that his allies, or perhaps there are more, maybe they're pulling the strings of the puppet, Iran and Russia, won't let him step down. But I mean, you know, what he's fighting for now, having really lost any chance of ruling in a recognizable way, is a great question. I mean, it's impossible for him.
Bartle Bull is the former editor of Prospect magazine. His recent op-ed on Syria appeared in the New York Times. We'll link you to it at hereandnow.org. We'll have more after a break, including Bartle's argument that the West, including the U.S., should be arming the rebels. And later in the show, a cruise down the Mississippi River during this very dry summer. Back in a minute, Here and Now. Welcome back to our conversation about Syria with journalist Bartle Bull, a former foreign editor at Prospect magazine. He's also a founder of Northern Gulf Partners, an Iraq-focused investment firm. As the fighting continues in the capital, Damascus, and the country's largest city, Aleppo, the UN has named a special envoy to Syria, a new one, even though the peacekeeping mission has failed so far. Bartle, you wrote that when you were in Syria earlier this month, the refrain you heard most often was, "Where is Obama?" So, two-part question for you. What do the Syrians want the U.S. to do, and what do you think the U.S. should do now?
I think that the Syrian public, if we can use that term, is very eager to see American support, whether it's medicine for the revolution, arms for the revolution, or up to a no-fly zone, or farther up at really the top of the scale, what you might call the Libya model, more than no-fly zone, active, overt U.S. attacks on the regime from the air, active overt support on the ground of the revolution. That would be the highest end of the scale. Higher than that, of course, is invasion. No one wants that. Second part of your question, what should we do?
Uh-huh.
I think the model that worked well in Libya is absolutely called for in a country that's far more important than Libya, far more promising in terms, I think, of how close it is to a modern liberal future. And the more robust end of the spectrum gets this over with more quickly. And that's important because the longer this goes on, the harder the reconstruction is going to be.
Bartle, you wrote an opinion piece for the New York Times this week headlined, What Syria's Rebels Need. And you argue that we should arm them. And you make it sound simple. You know, you say 500 missiles, 1,000 rocket-propelled grenade launchers, and that should crack the regime within a couple of months. But of course, the pushback question is, why arm the rebels at all? So what do you consider the U.S. strategic interest in Syria?
Our interests there are very significant, Sasha. We can look at its neighbors, it borders, it's on the Mediterranean borders, you know, some very, very important countries from Turkey in the north to Lebanon in the south, Iraq in the east, and so on. It is Iran's only friend other than Hezbollah, which the Assad regime really is the lifeline for. Assad provides Russia with her only warm water naval base in the world at Tartus on the Mediterranean coast. Syria has a substantial, the Assad regime rather, has a substantial amount of U.S. blood on its hands from the war in Iraq. And Assad himself is probably one of our four or five most vigorous and public adversaries on the global stage.
So if he could be ousted, and if the rebels were to win, what do you envision Syria looking like? Would it be like Libya or Egypt, which, you know, as we know, are taking very slow steps toward something called democracy or something like democracy?
Yes. I mean, this is the great question, and it's so important to any intervention decision. Why intervene if the place is going to be a mess forever anyway? I see Syria as more like Yugoslavia before its civil war, pretty close to standard of living and the level of civil society, far closer to a Yugoslavia in the 1980s before its war than Iraq or Libya or Yemen or Egypt.
And does that make you think that if we were to intervene, we are less likely to see, in a sense, the mess that we continue to see in Iraq even after we intervened and left? I mean, just yesterday there were dozens of people killed in attacks in Iraq attributed to Al-Qaeda. Are you thinking Syria was stable enough pre-outbreak that it could be more stable if there were a collapse of the regime?
Sasha, in terms of a starting point, I'm really glad you bring up Al-Qaeda, and that's something that'll be really important to discuss. But wasn't the thrust of this question. You know, your question, in a sense, is about the starting point of a free Syria. Would it be as difficult as it has been in Iraq? And I think it would be very, very much easier. There was nothing like what Saddam did to the Marsh Arabs or the Kurds in Iraq. There was nothing like the numerous foreign wars of Saddam and so on. There were no sanctions in Syria that, as there were in Iraq, which did so much to criminalize almost the entire country in Iraq, which did so much to impoverish the entire country. You know, Syria was a year and a half ago a very, very, very normal place. I mean, anyone we know would have happily taken their grandmother on holiday all across the country. It will start its freedom from a much better place. The only thing that will make things difficult is a unduly long prolonging of this war, which will ultimately, if it goes on too long, have an effect on the way the various communities there can deal with each other.
On the point of taking grandmother there, you know, you noted in your New York Times piece that as early 2011, you know, tourists from around the world visited the ruins of Palmyra. They, as you wrote, they drank French wine in the boutique hotels of Aleppo and Damascus. So it's been a very quick collapse, but it wasn't like that all that recently.
True. And that's really important as we think about what to do there. You know, this is a place that can bounce back.
Besides being a journalist, Bartle, you're also part of an investment firm that focuses on Iraq called Northern Gulf Partners. And of course, you are advocating that we should arm the rebels. What do you say to listeners who might assume that you have business interests that would benefit from Assad being ousted from Syria?
I can only say that I don't. I have no business whatsoever in Syria. I do think it's a really promising place. I think any adventurous investor around the world would be very, very interested in a place with so much promise. And I'd certainly have a look at it from that side of my profession if it were when it's free. But what I've seen and written are 100% matters of conviction.
Bartle Bull is a former editor of Prospect magazine and a founder of Northern Gulf Partners, an Iraq-focused investment firm. Bartle, thanks for talking with us.
Sasha, thank you very much.
Monday on Here and Now, Bain Capital has been under a magnifying glass since its founder, Mitt Romney, has been running for president. What's going on inside the firm? And does anyone in it care what the outside world is saying about them? Also, Amanda Copeland's debut novel, The Orchardist, taps family history and her love of the Pacific Northwest. That's Monday. News is next, Here and Now.